NHL-prat med Ulven og Bakke.
Vi vet jo hva vi snakker om.
Dette er fullt alvor, dette er ikke en test. Det er endelig NHL-prat igjen.
Og hver gang jeg ser Markus Hannikain, så tenker jeg at det D-Tech-møsje der også.
Vi skrabler som alltid vi.
Det er helt vanvittig.
Det er ny reklamvår. NHL-prat, litt som en lei kløe.
Oi.
Velkommen til en ny episode med NHL-prat. En litt annen gang. Jeg har byttet ut min faste partner. Jeg har hentet inn ekspertise fra det vi i utland, og da må man jo gå til USA da, og til noen som har med Flyers å gjøre når det er snakk om Flyers-episode. Jeg har hentet inn en, som regel, en fjerdedel av Broad Street Hockey Radio-podcasten, en person som jeg tror også deler mye av min glede, men også sorg og frustrasjon rundt det laget her. Kelly Hinkle, thank you so much for joining me.
Hello! Other languages are so much more musical than English.
It's Norwegian is really sing-songy as well, so it's a lot of up and down. So
it's
no, but thank you so much. Luckily, I won't challenge you on Norwegian for much of this. But that's not the expertise I want to talk to you about because, like I told you earlier, if there's someone out there who has a PhD in the pain of being a Flyers fan, I think it would be you and the BASH radio crew. And so in that case, you're kind of an expert without really wanting to be one. But thank you so much for joining me again.
Of course. I'm very excited to talk to you.
The Flyers is an interesting team, to say it, to put it mildly. I'm just going to start with an open-ended question, and we'll sort of go back a bit from there. But if you were to describe this, the feeling you have of this team and of this club before this season, how would you put that?
I think it's kind of one of those things. It's mostly disappointment, I think. I know a lot of fans are kind of angry or, you know, disgusted or some, you know, very dramatic emotion. But for me, it's just disappointment because, you know, this used to be a lot of fun. I've been a Flyers fan since 1996. And
good timing. Good timing.
Yeah, right. Yeah. For most of that time, it's been a lot of fun. We haven't won a Stanley Cup, but they've always been a good team. And having a good team is fun. And the last decade or so it's been like a slow slip into where we are now, which is very bad. And that's just, it's kind of a bummer because it shouldn't be this way. It doesn't need to be this way. The Flyers should be an organization that just as a base level is a successful hockey team. And they've lost that. And it's just, as a fan, it's disappointing to know going in that you're probably going to have a bad time.
Yeah, I had a tweet I responded to a fellow Flyers fan on Twitter regarding this season and feeling going into it. And his point of view was he's never been less excited for his Flyers season. And I was like, I'm less apathetic this year than last year. That was like my low point in just apathy. A couple of years ago. But now it's more a combination of pent-up anger and crippling disappointment, which is always a nice thing to sort of, when that's the thing.
Great. That's exactly what you want to feel about something that's supposed to be fun.
Yeah, that's it. I think I can qualify to say I sort of know how Steve Dangle feels. So at this point, so and Leafs Nation. So I think we're starting to qualify there. But the thing is, I don't know about you, but to me the big disappointment now is, for a while I was wanting this team to take the step into what we would view as modern hockey, more speed, more skill, less size, less of that quote unquote Flyers hockey that's been following this team around since its inception, basically. And Ron Hextall came in. And players were traded. They started focusing more on the draft, which was a no-no when I started, when Bob Clark in the GM days, so when I started watching this team back in 2003. And finally, they were doing something. Finally, they were getting draft picks. They were getting talents. They were getting young players, and they were sort of going that way. And the minute that didn't work, they just pulled a 180. And now it's all the way back again.
Yeah.
Am I sort of describing how this went? how's your view of that part of the team?
I think you're absolutely right. I think that the failure of the Hextall era, and you know, we can talk about why that was a failure, but I think, you know, I don't think it's a very simple thing. I think there are a lot of layers to why it didn't work, but they've kind of overcorrected at this point and decided to, you know, rather than cut your losses and, you know, figure out how to build a good hockey team, they've just decided to double down on what we've got. And, you know, after you've acknowledged that nothing worked for the last 5 years, I don't know how you come to the conclusion that the problem that you have now can be quickly solved with a new coach and, you know, a couple of added players. Like, it just seems crazy to me that this is the conclusion they've come to. And I think, as you were saying before we started, you know, there's a pass to this team that I think is holding it back. And it's hard to see how they can move forward until they let go of that.
Yeah, because that to me is a big thing of why I love this club. It also has becomes a sort of big frustration. And I think it's a lot to do with history and also somewhat to do with the fan base or parts of it and sort of that divide, which was the big joke this whole offseason was Chuck Fletcher is the only person being able to bring those factions together because everyone was so pissed off at what he did. So in that way, he should have gotten a Peace Prize or something for that work. But that has also been a big thing. And the Broad Street Bullies in the 70s and sort of this label of being like the fighting team and the big tough team. You guys know that as well. But if you're going to explain that to sort of someone who loves hockey but doesn't really know Flyers history that well, that label and that what that is to this team and to this fan base, how would you describe that?
So, just, you know, a quick bit of history. So the teams that won the Stanley Cups for the Flyers back in the late 70s, they were given the name the Broad Street Bullies, and that's because they had a bunch of guys on the team that liked to fight. So they were given that name. They won a couple of cups. They go down in history as, you know, the most successful Flyers teams because they're the only ones that won Stanley Cups. And I think as a result, that Broad Street Bullies mentality has kind of stuck with the franchise forever. And, you know, there's not anything I think necessarily wrong with embracing that history.
Oh no, absolutely not. I agree with you.
Yeah, like I think you could, if you wanted to, in 2022, you know, continue to be the Broad Street Bullies. But the thing that they seem to have forgotten, and this is something that Bill has said on our show over and over again, the Broad Street Bullies also had a bunch of Hall of Famers on the team, a bunch of guys with NHL scoring records. Like, this wasn't just a team full of goons that was hard to play against because they were tough and they would hit you and they would fight you. Like, that wasn't what won them Stanley Cups. It was having the best goaltender in the game, you know, at the time. It was having a guy like Bobby Clark or a guy like Bill Barber that's going to score a ton of goals for you. Like, that's why they won Stanley Cups. And for some reason, they have keyed in on the bullies part of that history and not so much on the talent part of that history. And I think that's where they make the mistake, is that the bully part can be there, but the bully part has to come after the talent. The talent has to come first. And for some reason, particularly over the last decade, well, really since the salary cap got into play. Because before the salary cap, the Flyers would go out and buy talent. They would get whoever they wanted just by throwing a ton of money at them. It was very easy.
I used to say that they bought the best team in the league 5 years too late is what I usually say. Like, they had if that team were together 5 years earlier, they would have won everything. Like the 2004 team who went to the Stanley Cup, the Eastern Conference Finals, that team would have crushed Detroit 5 years earlier.
Yeah.
But they were they were 5 years older. So, and that was the thing. That was, Flyers and Rangers were like the kings of that. So, yeah, but then they could buy the best teams because they had money.
Right. And since the salary cap came into place, it would It seems like the people running the Flyers haven't been able to figure out how to do it without the checkbook. And that's what they need to figure out. Other teams have figured it out. You know, you look at like the Avalanche, who have all of this talent on their team, and they're still able to throw $12 million at their best player. Like, the Flyers couldn't sign a 13th forward right now if they wanted to. We have zero cap dollars. Like, they just don't know what they're doing with the salary cap. And that is, you know, both terrifying because obviously it's not going anywhere, and also frustrating because every team has had this restriction for almost 20 years now. And they've all figured it out and the Flyers haven't. And you have to ask yourself, like, why? Why is that? What's going on with the organization that we can't figure out how to build a team under the salary cap?
Yeah, and I think like, not to bring up Ron Hextall too much, but I think that was probably where he was the best one of this era as far as GMs. He understood that, and he used a lot of time early to get him out of cap hell and tried to make deals that would work in that way. And yeah, just one example of how mismanaging cap can bring you into things. Like, right now, they have zero cap space because they can go over because of Couturier and Ryan Ellis being on long-term injury reserve, but they have zero cap space. But that was really prevalent this summer when they had re-signed Ristolainen and then signed Tony DeAngelo to a total of, I think, 10.5 or something, $10.5 to $10 million. Yep. And that was the amount Johnny Gaudreau got in Columbus. And they weren't even able to be in on that because, they just put it elsewhere. And I don't know if they wanted to. I think I haven't really gotten if they genuinely wanted him or if that was just... But again, that's really not good cap management at all. And when you see teams like, for instance, the Maple Leafs, who now squeeze in $4 short of the cap with Brandon Pridham, who's amazing at that. When you see like what Penguins are able to do year in and year out and just squeeze guys in and maneuver guys in, what Boston's been able to do for 10 years now. And like, and it's so frustrating. I don't know what it is, if it's just bad management or just bad evaluating of talent, putting money in places they like, putting too much money to players who doesn't deserve it, or I'm not sure, but it's been sort of wasteful. And there's always been, like, I can't remember a time where there hasn't been like one or two like anchors on this team in terms of money deals. It's been McDonald for God knows how long, and then it's been JVR for somewhat, and then it's always been there. So someone has had a deal that was too much for too long, or it's been frustrating. Jory Laterra, for Christ's sake, so
a long time, yeah.
Yeah, it's been that much. So that you said the cap management is a really, really good point. And again, it's just, how do you get out of it? And do you think this will change? To sort of explain the names to people who don't know, I think a lot of our listeners do, because they are, the thing is, if you're Norwegian and NHL fan, you know about the league, not just your team, because it's demanding to keep up late at night.
I would.
So it's a small bunch, but they're dedicated for sure. But if you look now at the GMs of the past, like we've mentioned Hextall, he's now gone, he's in Penguin. But before him it was Paul Holmgren, and then before him, Bob Clark was before that. Clark and Holmgren are still in the front office and senior management. My fear is that this will not change until they both are gone. Because this summer to me was like Bob Clark just winning the team. I don't know if that's overly conspiratorial of me, but I don't know. I just feel those guys just still hold that, gotta be tough, and just stamp on this team. I don't know. What do you think about those guys and the influence they still have?
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. It It's not something that I ever thought about before the last couple of seasons, but the last couple of seasons, I think, have made it really obvious that these guys that have been around forever have, I think, an outsized influence over the direction of the franchise. And I don't think anyone's ever going to tell them that they can't, because they're held up as like gods almost within the Flyers organization. No one's going to tell Bob Clark, you know, that he's wrong or that he's got bad ideas or that he doesn't know what he's talking about, because he's Bob Clark.
Yeah.
And so until you either bring in someone who has the balls to tell these guys, like, no, we're not listening to you, you don't know what you're doing. Like, you, Bob Clark never won anything as a general manager. Paul Holmgren never won anything as a general manager. These guys have never been able to build a Cup winning team, for better or for worse, whatever circumstances led to that, they never did it. So it's not like we're talking about guys who have some kind of, you know, bank of knowledge that we just can't lose because they're so good at their jobs. They're not. And I think with Chuck Fletcher specifically, he's said over and over again that he likes to have a collaborative office. Like, he likes to listen to what other people in the front office have to say when he's making his decisions. And I think the issue with Fletcher is that he has a long history with Bob Clark. He was his assistant in Florida. And I think that he probably gives too much weight to what Bob Clark is saying or what Paul Holmgren is saying. And he needs to, he doesn't seem to me like the type of person that will put his foot down and say, no way, we're not doing this, when someone like a Bob Clark is in the room with him telling him what he should do. He just kind of seems a little bit like a pushover. Like, he just kind of takes advice too much. And I think you're right. Until these guys are gone, and unfortunately, at least now, it seems like the only way they're going to be gone is if they decide to leave. And I don't know if they ever will. But, you know, you could have somebody take over at the top that has no ties to any of these people, because people forget, I think, that Dave Scott, even, he's not really an outsider to all of this. Like, he was the guy that Ed Snyder chose to put into this role. And so, you know, with that, you have to understand that, you know, if this is a guy that Ed Snyder kind of took under his wing, you know, however many years ago, he's also in that club with the Bob Clark, with the Paul Holmgren, with Dean Lombardi. Like, he's in that mix with these guys. So he's never going to fire them. He's never going to tell them to leave. So I think unless these guys, you know, decide they want to finally retire and just go play golf somewhere, or you get somebody at the top, you get somebody in the Dave Scott role that has zero connection whatsoever to these people and can objectively say, you're all doing a bad job, I'm firing you because you suck at your job. Like no personal connection, no ties, no friendships, nothing. Just a pure evaluation of performance. All of you stink. You got to go. Unless we get one of those people or these guys leave, I don't see how it could possibly get better.
No, it's same. And just to clarify for those who don't know, Dave Scott is the CEO of Comcast, who owns the team. Comcast Sportsnet now. Comcast was the sort of organization that Ed Snyder, who was the founder and owner, he sort of put his ownership into Comcast in the 90s, I think. And so, but Snyder was the owner. And then when he, and then Comcast took over, what Snyder was a part of that. And then when Snyder was gone, I think Dave Scott has been the CEO for quite some time now. But that's sort of the thing as well, that you don't have that owner, you don't have that president or that person on top to give that clear to, at least to me, I don't see anyone above that group of people in the front office who sort of has the final say, or gives the impression of having the final say, like Yeah, like the owners of certain clubs, like a Brendan Shanahan in Toronto, like those guys. So it's sort of seems like the front office is all just running the whole operation, and no one's really holding him accountable. And because you said the CEO is sort of part of that club.
That's actually a really good point, though, because most NHL teams have a general manager, and then above that general manager, a president of hockey operations. The Flyers gave Chuck Fletcher both of those jobs.
Yep, they did.
So there's no person evaluating Chuck Fletcher. Chuck Fletcher is evaluating his own performance. He's not going to fire himself. So that was a big mistake from the jump, not putting someone in between, you know, the CEO and the general manager. There's no one in between there to, you know, objectively evaluate what the front office is doing. And that's a big problem. I hope that whenever they part ways with Chuck Fletcher, I hope they don't do that again. There's too much friendship, I think, in this organization. And that's a thing that people always loved about the Flyers. And when things are going well, like, that kind of stuff is fine.
Yeah.
If the team's good, if everyone's succeeding, if everyone's doing a great job, I don't care if all your buddies are hanging out in the front office. That's fine. But as bad as it's gotten now, there has to be some, you know, stepping back and saying this isn't working. So we can't just do the things we've been doing for the last 10 years. None of them worked. But all of these people, I think, are not the kind of people that think they make bad decisions. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
A professional athlete, the ego there is, you know, such that Bob Clark's never going to think he's making a bad choice.
He will publicly go out and declare he's not making a bad choice and try to put the people who would do different name and throw him under the bus like he did with Hextall. Why are Bob Clark doing those interviews like that?
Yes.
I just laughed at that because it was so, to me, on character of the GM, the leader, the ego of that guy. But again, it like I said, I loved that part of the history of the Flyers, that family feeling, that loyalty to the players who's been part of your club, at least most of them. Eric Lindros was another thing, but that luckily that worked itself out now. But that feeling of if you're a Flyer, you're a Flyer for life, and so many former players chose to live there and be part of that community. And that worked when Ed Snyder was the man, because he was the guy who, but he still kept everyone in check. And he was sort of the voice that guided the ship. And did he guide it? I didn't always agree with how he did it. I think they just forgot that the draft was a thing for like 15 years and sure sacrificed that. And they kept the playoff streak going for a while, but holy cow, did they waste a lot of draft picks. During the, especially the decade before the salary cap went and everything. So, but still, he had sort of the, this is a family, and that worked because he was still the guy who said, well, you still gotta do your job, and kept people accountable. He's not there anymore. So that just becomes a negative. And that's too bad.
Yeah.
And, looking at this team now and where they're at, it's Kelly. I'm trying to think of something positive here. Can you help me, please? Or is it? Is there something? Is there something good?
I'm gonna give you some stuff.
Please give me some stuff, please.
Yeah, I have decided on my own that I'm going to have fun this season, regardless of what this team does to me.
Okay.
There are some good things. I think for a very long time, particularly during the Hextall era, as Flyers fans, we really wanted to see the kids. We wanted to see the young players. We wanted to see what they could do in the NHL. It looks like this year we're finally going to, and I think that's pretty fun.
That's fun.
Ronnie Attard and Igor Zamula made the team, which I personally did not expect to happen. So, you know, we'll at least see them a couple of times. You know, we'll see how they do. If they do well, I'm assuming they'll stay up. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, Samula is that's one to be optimistic about for sure to me. So yeah, I'm liking this already.
Yeah, and then you have I don't think John Tortorella solves the problem, but I do think that he could be a good coach for a guy like Morgan Frost. We talked about this a bit on the show, so you've probably heard it already, but I don't think that Morgan Frost has been put in a position to succeed when he's been able to play, because he's been hurt a lot.
Yeah.
But it kind of seems like the way that Tortorella describes what he wants from his players, it seems like maybe Frost will be put in a position to succeed. So it'll be kind of cool to see if he can actually turn into something. Like, he's not going to be a superstar, but, you know, if he can turn into a good 3C, that's good to have. I think that there are like little building blocks that Tortorella specifically can put into place so that when the team hopefully has a new general manager with a better vision, once we start acquiring talent, having those building blocks in place, I think, is going to put us in a good position to, you know, improve as a team maybe a little bit quicker than we would without those building blocks. So I think that's kind of cool. Tortorella, he's going to be fun to watch. You know, he's a character.
Yeah, he will.
That's fun. And I mean, like, at the end of the day, I think as fans, like, especially hockey fans, for some reason, we get ourselves very emotionally invested in the teams that we love. I am the kind of person that for most of my time as a Flyers fan, my mood entirely dependent on how the Flyers are doing. If they're losing a bunch, I'm annoyed. If they're winning a bunch, I'm super happy. But, you know, this is supposed to be fun. Like, this is supposed to be a thing that we do for fun. And I think that if we kind of, like, you know, choose to look at the good things within all of the bad things, because there's going to be a lot of bad things. Like, there's no getting around it. The team's not going to be good from a results standpoint. But we can have fun with the little bit of good that we're probably going to have. And, I mean, it's possible that there's no good at all, and we're all completely insane by Christmas time. But
lottery. You know, come on. That's right? That's the shining light at the end of the tunnel.
It's actually very annoying that Arizona and Chicago are going to be as bad as they are, because they're really ruining our shot. But yeah, and that's the other thing, that this year specifically, like, obviously, if you get a top three pick any year, you're probably going to get a good player unless you draft Nolan Patrick. But Like at least this season, we know that there is a very big prize to be won at the end of this if you lose a whole bunch of games. So at least that, you know, you can actually find a little bit of positivity in the team being really, really bad, because the worse they are, the better shot we have at landing, you know, what looks to be the next Connor McDavid. So
yeah.
There's good things to find if you can, you know, allow yourself to enjoy it. I do think a lot of Flyers fans, and you're on Twitter, so I'm sure you see this, a lot of Flyers fans are just refusing to allow themselves to enjoy this at all. They're just saying, no, I'm not going to. I'm like, that's fine if you want to make that choice, but if you're going to watch 82 games, you know, you might as well let yourself enjoy it a little bit. Yeah. Otherwise, you're going to go nuts.
And I will say, this fan base is one of the better at Schadenfreude. So it's they're doing it with a smile, at least. So that's the big thing. So, but if I'm not mistaken, not to just kill the hope of this draft if they get there, but I think they have had top five picks three times since the 2000s. And I believe those three players are Joona Pitkinen, JVR, and Nolan Patrick. So,
historically,
yeah,
not done very well.
It's like when you draft better in the 20s than you do in the top fives. It's yeah, but again, this year should be more safe.
You're in the top five this year. It should be impossible for them to blow it.
It should be.
Theoretically.
It should be. Like you just touched on Tortorella, and I had mixed feelings when he was hired, because I think as a coach, I think he's perfect. If you just put this team in a box, nothing else matters other than this season, how they perform this season. I think he might be the perfect coach to go in there and just blow the whole culture up. Skate them till they're dead and make them work really hard. I think that's the way this team is going to perform the best they can, possibly. But also, I think it also affirmed the way this team wants to play and the focus they have on it. And I think, and I don't give them enough credit to go, well, this way we'll play the best for now. I think their focus is, this is how we want to play forever. So I think he'll do a great job short term, but it just affirmed the front office focus of this team. And yeah, so but no, we'll try to have fun with it. And like you said, there are players to sort of be optimistic about, and at least follow with curiosity. I think what is Travis Konecny and what can he do under Torts? It's yeah. You know, Owen Sippet, he never got a shot in Florida. I would say for a reason, but now we'll see. What value does he have? Noah Cates had a really good ending to last season. Can he build on that? Morgan Frost, as you pointed out. Will Travis Sanheim finally be able to be this team's best defender and not being held back by the coaches? To me, he's just never gotten a real shot, has he? He's just been sort of. I've all felt like he's been held sort of like a between thing, and he's gonna go in the summer and he's gonna be just great in another team.
Oh yeah, like if he were like on Florida or something, he would be crazy good.
Oh yeah, he would be like the great. He would be a perfect like Uyghur replacement uh-huh. there. I think put him with Ekblad, that would be.
Yeah. The thing with Sanheim is he's another one that I don't think has been put in a position to be the best version of himself. Like he's been very good. But I mean, he's never really had an Aaron Ekblad, like a very sound defensive partner that would allow him to be the guy that gets creative offensively. He's never had that. So he's, I don't think ever been able to kind of fully show what he can do on the offensive side, and also, you know, not being given power play time.
I can't fathom for the life of me why they won't try that. It's
insane. It makes sense.
He's probably the fourth choice right now with D'Angelo, Provorov, and Ristolainen ahead of him. And I know what Ivan Provorov is capable of when he's doing good, but he's never been a power play.
He's always been bad at it.
He's always been bad at it. And it's, I can't for the life of me figure that one out.
Yeah, so, like, Tortorella has said, one of the things that I've heard him say a couple of times that I really like to hear is that he is okay with players making mistakes that come from taking risks that, you know, would pay off if you didn't screw them up. So I think that coaches in the past with the Flyers have been unwilling to allow players to make those kinds of mistakes. It's one of the things I think that's held Morgan Frost back so much, is that anytime he had a game where he tried some stuff that didn't work, he was immediately stapled to the bench. Yeah. And so that tells him, I can't try these things and get playing time, so I'm not going to try these things anymore. And you know, that's where his strength has always lied, is being creative offensively. And if you don't let him do that, he's not going to be good. And if you know, you have to accept that mistakes are going to be made. And Tortorella has said a couple of times that he's okay with the team making those kinds of mistakes. So hopefully that will lead to an environment where guys like Sanheim feel like they can make a riskier play than they would have otherwise because the coach isn't going to bench them for doing it. So, you know, we might see some guys get a little bit better under this kind of coaching. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, the Flyers, the players on the Flyers, most of them, are not bad hockey players. We don't have
No, they're not.
You know, we don't have any, like, tier one superstar players. But, like, this isn't Arizona. Like, the team has some talent on it. And if Tortorella can harness it and get them to play to their maximum potential, you know, there's a chance they could be, you know, not a terrible hockey team. There's absolutely no way. I mean, there's absolutely no way they're going to compete in any meaningful way.
No, there isn't. But yeah,
this roster. But I do think, if nothing else, the games will be more entertaining than they were last year, just because last year they were such a disaster.
Yeah, that was just that was just painful. That was
just terrible hockey last year. Like, couldn't make a line change, couldn't get the puck out of the zone, like, just nonsense. And I think all of that will be gone. So at least in that way, we'll see some improvement that I think will make the games a little bit more interesting to watch.
Yeah, hopefully. And then we'll see how they where they go from there and how they'll keep, well, building or retooling this team, however they do and what they do. But again, because the sad thing is, to me, like you said and like you pointed out, and what they have been for so long before this wonderful decade came along, this was one of the staple playoff teams every year. They've always been up there. They've always competed. They've been, and again, they've been one of the financial carriers of them. Like, they've the arena were always full. They were loud. They were one of the greatest atmospheres in the league. And now it's just gone. It'll be fascinating to see how that'll fare during this season, if that can be sort of, they can begin to turn that around. And because I just need, now they just need to awaken the enthusiasm again. And hopefully they can do it. But
you know what's interesting?
Yeah.
That tomorrow's home opener is actually very nearly sold out.
Wow, I would not have guessed that. But again,
I would not have guessed it either. but so the Flyers have an opportunity here, right? Like, if they come out tomorrow and they play the best game of hockey that they could possibly play, given the players that they are, if they, you know, put on a show, even if they lose, if it's like a really close, like 3-2 loss or something, like, they do have an opportunity to grab onto some people who are passionate about this team and just want to enjoy them. So if there's a nearly packed house tomorrow and they play a good game of hockey, you know, you're going to have people that are like, all right, I'll come back and see that again. So, I mean, it's all up to them. Like, they can turn this around anytime they want to. Flyers fans are crazy. Like, yeah. All we need to they're not going anywhere. You just need to give them something worth spending their time on, and, you know, they'll be right back in it.
Yeah, and to this, I think, especially to this fan base, is if that involves a lot of work ethic and hard-nosed hockey,
yeah,
they'll take a 5-3 loss, they'll take a 4-2 loss, and some wins got to be in there for sure, but at least you can win over a bunch with just working hard. And that's been, I think, also the big frustrating part for a big part of the fan base, when me included, and I would assume you guys as well. It's just the effort hasn't been there, along with the hockey's been bad, but it's just, they haven't really, it's been so dead. So if that comes back, or at least gets better, then I would assume they can at least bring some of the fan base back, because at least you'll have something fun to watch with physical and high energy hockey. May not be the slickest and most skilled, but yeah, it'll be a fight, both figuratively and literally. So,
Yeah, right.
So yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch, both in the long run and also this season how it goes. Kelly, thank you so much. I won't keep you. I know you've taken the time out of your day, and I thank you so much for that. Thank you for helping me sort of explain this enigma of a team, both in a historical sense, but also how they ended up here. Because I don't know, it seems like it's not that long ago after the COVID season, or the first one, I would say, and being so hopeful going into the next one last season, and it just crumbled from the start. So just a final thing. Me and my partner who I do this podcast with, we were kind of optimistic about where this team was going. And then it just fell apart last year. I remember listening to you guys as well after the wrist align deal was a disaster. But the total of getting Ellis in and all these other moves were like, yeah, I kind of like where they're going. There was an optimism there, wasn't it?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. I was super excited, particularly after the Ellis deal.
Yeah.
Because at the time, before we learned, it seemed like Chuck Fletcher got an absolute steal. He was the defenseman that I wanted. There were a few good defensemen available that summer. That was the one that I wanted.
Me too.
Chuck went out and got him. I was super pumped about it. We were, I think, pretty well convinced that if Carter Hart was able to turn it around, then the team was set. We were kind of convinced ourselves that the reason the previous season was so bad, not completely Carter Hart's fault, but a large part of it was the fact that he just had just an absolutely terrible season. And so I think we were all telling ourselves, like, Carter Hart turns it around. We got Ryan Ellis. You know, this could be a good hockey team. They can get back to what they did during that bubble season, and it just didn't happen. So everything that we thought was going to happen last year didn't happen. So hey, maybe this year everything we think is going to happen this year, maybe it won't. You never know.
Yeah, I have no idea. But again, there are some players who just should have a better season, because I know they're better players than that. And Kevin Hayes coming off a incredibly difficult season on a personal level last year, I think that might have going to a new season, I think, might help him a bit. And I'm hopeful that sort of those things can help, and that can sort of, if he plays better, he can bring other guys along. But again, I think there are a couple of guys on the team who has sort of prove it, or you're not who we thought you were. And I think first and foremost is Travis Konecny. Like, what are you? Are you a player who can play on a top line and be on a power play and get 30 goals and 60, 70 points? Are you not that player? Should we go elsewhere? And it's I think it's a lot of question marks and a lot of things to be sort of to look after, I think. So in that way, and like you said, a lot of the young players are coming up. In that sense, I think there are things to be sort of excited and interested in going into this season. But like you said, I just hope they can get a good start, so it doesn't just kill all the momentum, however small it might be, just from the start.
At least give us something to enjoy. That's all we can ask for.
That's not a big demand, is it?
It really is.
That's how far we're falling, Kelly. We're just give us something, please.
Yeah.
Just one thing. That's all we ask. No, but again, thank you so much for taking the time in to walk this path of the joy of being a Flyers fan along with me. And
thank you so much.
And enjoy the season as much as you can, because hopefully
I will try.
Hopefully it won't be as bad as some we might fear, but we'll see. And if it goes too bad, there might be a light at the end of the tunnel being the lottery. And so there's always some hope to cling on to, even though it might be hard sometimes. Thank you so much, and have a good day.
Thank you. You too.